This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Can you tell the difference between promotional speech and scientific exchange? Or the difference between what can and cannot be said in television commercials for prescription or other healthcare products? If you answered no, don't worry, you're not alone. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA Global Forum. Today, I'm speaking with Wayne Pines, president for regulatory services and healthcare for APCO Worldwide. Wayne has been a part of every DIA advertising and promotional regulatory affairs conference for 3 decades. He has also served for 10 years in senior positions at the US FDA, including Associate Commissioner for Public Affairs. He joins us today to discuss the importance of this year's gathering in the context of this entire field. Wayne, thank you for joining us today. Welcome. Good to be with you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Wayne, tell us a little bit to begin with about the history of the regulation of drug advertising and promotion, particularly in the US.
The beginning really can be traced to 1962, when the Congress amended the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and added to FDA's responsibility the advertising of prescription drugs. Of course, the 1960s were a much different world from a promotional standpoint, but nevertheless, there was a perception, and it was a major theme at the congressional hearing discussing the amendments to the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, but the major theme was abuses in the marketing of products. And the Congress intended to get at that issue by giving FDA the authority to oversee the regulation. Fast forward to the 1970s. By then, FDA had issued a series of regulations, Section 202 of the Code of Federal Regulations, and very complex. And if you look at them today, a little bit outmoded, and they haven't really been touched since they were first promulgated. Now we fast forward to the 1980s, and promotional activities really begin to change. Number one, we had the advent of electronic communications, television. American Medical Association had a television station. Secondly, the way that drugs were reimbursed began to change in earnest. No longer did you just go to the pharmacy and pay for your prescription. Now insurance was covering prescription products. And of course, we had the advent of electronic communications. You know, at the beginning of the regulation, it was the sales reps who were doing the vast majority. Now, today, the sales reps are still important, but there are so many other ways of communicating. In the 1980s, and before then, FDA had a tiny office, 4 or 5 people who were overseeing the promotion of prescription drug materials. And there was no one in the device area, no one in the biologics area who was doing this. Toward the late 1980s, FDA began to ramp up this area. In 1990, in December of that year, the incoming commissioner of FDA, David Kessler, published an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which described the challenges faced in terms of advertising and his concern. I happened to be the co-author of that article. David and I did that together. And then when he became commissioner, he really ramped up the regulation of this area. And that was the beginning of the modern era of regulation of advertising and promotion of prescription drugs. In 1989, there were 4 or 5 people overseeing this. In 1991, there were 40. And he changed the name of the division to the Division of Drug Marketing, Advertising, and Communications, what we now know as DDMAC. It no longer exists because they've since changed the name, but it was DDMAC for many, many decades. And that was really the beginning of the modern era of FDA oversight of promotional materials. Dr. Kessler also established units within the Center for Biologics, within CDRH in devices, and assigned also to the Center for Veterinary Medicine the responsibility. So it was not only in the prescription drug area, but it was across the board in the whole medical product area that we saw an increase in regulation. So that was really a brief history leading up to modern times, because basically it started in the early 90s the way that we see it today.
As you pointed out, the early history began in the early 1960s. If you can take us back a little bit to that era, that was the era, you know, Elvis, Jersey Boys, maybe the Beach Boys. What were some of the abuses that led to the early regulation of advertising and promotion? Can you give us a couple of examples if you can think back that far?
Well, I remember one. This was in the 1970s, where a company wanted to establish basically a frequent flyer program. Mm-hmm. That is to reward doctors for frequently prescribing their products, which clearly is inappropriate. That effort made the front page of the New York Times and was quickly abandoned by the company. But it was a major company that I shall not mention today that proposed to have a frequent flyer type program for frequent prescribers of drugs. Secondly, there were basically claims that were made for products that were not true. There was very little risk information that was being communicated. So those were but it was mainly these programs, that high profile programs like that frequent flyer one, which stands out in my mind as being perhaps the most egregious example of a promotional effort on the part of the industry that was cited by the Congress and by the media.
So it seems, again, based on what you said a few moments ago, that what has changed in the field in the past 30 years or so has been a great increase in regulation of advertising and promotion, coupled with an increase in the headcount at FDA to enforce those regulations. Is that a fair assessment? Is there more to it?
No, that's correct. There's been an increase in the ways that information is communicated. Right now, as you know, the audiences have changed. Right now, we are communicating not just with physicians, but with formularies, with hospitals, with insurance companies. So there's a wider audience for prescription drug information, and the ways that information is communicated also has changed. In the 1960s, we didn't have electronic means. We had television, but there really wasn't any television advertising. Now, information is communicated through the internet, on television, in a great number of ways. The biggest audience, of course, that has changed is the patient community. When we were growing up in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, there was no direct communication between the drug industry and the device industry with patients. Now, of course, we see on television every day and every evening direct communication. So that has been a fundamental change in the way that information about prescription products and medical devices has changed.
In television advertising of prescription drugs, I believe, is conducted only in two countries in the world, the United States for sure, and I believe the other country is New Zealand. Is that correct?
That is correct. DTC advertising on television is permitted only in those two countries.
Why is it not permitted in any other country? Or maybe conversely, why is it permitted only in US and New Zealand? What is your perspective on that?
Well, it's obviously controversial in the US, and there still remain doctors and other healthcare professionals and others within the consumer community who do not believe that information like that should be communicated directly to patients. We have a slightly different culture than some of the other countries. And beginning in the 1970s, there was a great effort, which I was involved in when I was at the FDA, to enhance communications with patients. I think it has to do with the involvement of patients in their own healthcare decisions. In this country, I think we have great involvement by patients in healthcare decisions, whereas in other countries, I think there's more control by the doctors. But there's an inherent objection by a lot of people, and it remains, to direct-to-consumer advertising, especially on television, and our country has decided to permit it.
Let me ask you, what is the current regulatory environment? You've mentioned how the constituencies have changed. They've expanded from just the physicians to pharmacists and benefits providers and, of course, patients. So currently, what is the environment for advertising and promotion of pharmaceuticals?
The first point I would make is that compliance is better than it's ever been before. The Office of Inspector General cases, the False Claims Act cases that came about beginning in the early 2000s, and that have cost the industry many, many billions of dollars for off-label prescribing through their settlements. That has led to compliance programs and promotional review practices within companies that really have increased compliance. So there's a need for less enforcement. There are still abuses or perceived abuses, but the compliance, I think, is higher than it's ever been before. As a consequence of that, the number of actions that FDA has been taking against companies has diminished. In the year 2017, for example, there have been 4 enforcement actions taken by the FDA. In 2016, there were only about 10 or 11 enforcement letters that went out from the Office of Prescription Drug Promotion. So the number of enforcement actions has diminished because of the increased compliance. What we see the FDA doing now is trying to establish clear policies, and there's a need for the establishment of still clearer policies in this area.
What are the biggest challenges for an advertising and promotion professional today?
The biggest challenges are, number one, keeping up with all the latest technology and making sure that the rules that FDA has established are applied to the newer technologies. Secondly, there are a number of court cases that have taken place, which have changed the enforcement landscape, and it's important for regulatory people and legal officials within companies and who are advising the companies to be sure that they're up to date on that. Mm-hmm. It's important for regulatory and legal officials within companies to be sure that they are interpreting the FDA regulations in a way that is appropriate for their particular products. As I've said before, sometimes the FDA regulations and guidances are not as clear as they might be, and therefore it's important for every company to have its own understanding of what those rules are and to be in compliance.
Which brings us to the DIA conference on advertising and promotional regulations. Since you've been involved in this conference series for 3 decades or more, can you tell us how has this conference series evolved over time?
The conference started in 1989, February of that year. And I have to take some responsibility or some credit for doing it. I went to the FDA and I went to DIA and said, let's do a conference in this area. It seems to be an area of increased importance and increased interest to the industry. And indeed it was. We had our first DIA conference the last week in February of the year 1989. And 550 people attended. At the time, it was, if not the largest, other than the annual meeting, one of the largest DIA conferences that took place at any point during the year. So there was an enormous amount of interest in this topic. Every year since then, the conference has been repeated, and it's been toward the end of February, now at the beginning of March. When we started it, we deliberately put it in the same hotel every single year, in the Marriott Marquis, and we deliberately made it a full day on a Thursday and a half a day on Friday so that people from out of town could come in and have Friday afternoon in New York. You know, it sounds strange to have that kind of construct, but that is a deliberate construct that we established. Of course, since then, because of hotel space and things like that, that formula no longer applies, and the meeting has since been moved to Washington. But for many, many years, it was the last week in February, Marriott Marquis Hotel in New York. One of the things that has made this conference so valuable and so enticing for people is the fact that we get FDA cooperation. The head of either DDMAC or OPDP, including the present leadership, has been very collaborative in bringing FDA people to the conference, not only in speaking from the podium, but also attending in the audience so that there can be communication between the FDA people and the industry. So that's basically the history of this meeting. It's always been successful. And I think in the future, as policies evolve, it will continue to be successful.
Looking then at the 2018 conference, which is now just a couple of months away, what do you think will be the key areas of interest and the takeaways from the conference?
I think there'll be an interest in understanding from FDA the recent guidances that were issued. In January 2017, just before the inauguration, two important guidances were issued, or draft guidances were issued by the FDA, one having to do with communications with formularies, the second having to do with how do you establish rules with regard to consistency with the labeling, which is an important concept in the ad promo world. So we're going to hear from FDA again, but it bears repeating, as to how they view those guidances. If there are any new guidances that are issued in the early part of 2018, of course, FDA will cover them. We're also going to hear about the latest enforcement actions. I mentioned that there have been relatively few, but all of them are important to understand where the FDA's emphasis is. So the first thing that I always look to is how many FDA sessions are there? And in this case, we're going to have multiple FDA sessions. Is it going to be one other on research? And that has proved to be very, very popular. FDA is doing an awful lot of research into how drug information is communicated, and we're going to hear about the latest research. So I look forward to these sessions. I have the opportunity and will, again, in the March meeting, to chair and to moderate some of these sessions. So I look forward to that. We're also going to be hearing about the latest efforts in terms of enhancing electronic communication of information. That's something that changes every year as companies try to become more comfortable with electronic communications. We're going to be hearing about how best to organize internally for the review of promotional materials. Every single company, almost without exception, if not entirely without exception, has a promotional review committee, and it's important for those committees to be able to function efficiently. And so there's going to be advice from some of the people who have a great deal of experience in this area to talk about that. And then finally, there are going to be a number of sessions which address how should a company function in the present enforcement environment, in the present administrative environment, in the present policy environment, and the present legal environment, and what changes might be coming in the future. So it's going to be a very, very exciting meeting. And as always, it will present up-to-date information. And people who attend will be able to emerge feeling that they have learned something from the experts.
You mentioned that FDA is doing research into this field. Can you give us a sense of what kinds of questions does that research ask?
They're mainly looking at how best to communicate risk information. We see on television every night a lot of commercials for prescription drugs, and we see that in a 60-second commercial, there's going to be 30 or 35 seconds of risk information. There's going to be information that is supered on the screen. Some of it is presented very, very quickly. How is that risk information being viewed by the people who are at home seeing the information? Are they really absorbing it? So the FDA has been looking into that for some time. We haven't seen any real changes over the past two decades in FDA policy with regard to how to communicate that information. But I would anticipate that at some point in the future, we will be seeing new guidance from FDA with regard to how to communicate risk information more effectively in DTC advertising.
Social media, 50 years ago, they didn't exist. Even 10 years ago, they didn't exist. They're here today. They're ubiquitous. Do social media provide opportunities for industry to communicate? Do they provide FDA headaches on how to regulate information that is disseminated through social media? What is your perspective on that?
Well, it certainly has been a challenge for the industry to adapt to that. What the agency has basically done over the years is to say the same fundamental rules that apply to all other promotional material apply to social media. And that's been the basic principle that companies have had to deal with. The FDA has not been as explicit as some people would like with regard to how to communicate that information. To this day, a lot of the policies that seem to emerge through enforcement actions rather than through guidance documents or regulations. The communication of prescription drug information through social media, I think, remains a challenge for the industry. The industry is very interested in using social media tactics, and I think is looking to the FDA to provide still more guidance in this area.
Will this topic be surfaced at the conference?
It always is. Social media is always a topic at these conferences, and it's always in the forefront of discussion.
Well, that brings us to the end of our conversation. Wayne, thank you so much for sharing your time and insights today. You're a terrific historian of the field, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
For DIA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.